barbarian girl, ignorantly slurped my soup, belched loudly, and ate with my hands. Jorgen would just roll his eyes. The fantasy made me smile, but then I frowned to myself. Why was I thinking about Jorgen, of all people? The others at the table laughed as someone mentioned Arturo's call sign, which nobody could pronounce. It must be quiet in your training, now that he's dropped, said Drama, a girl with an accent reminiscent of Kimmelin's. We'll survive, FM answered, though it is odd with him gone. There's no one to constantly explain things to me that I already know. What a strange flat you must have, Drama said. I know Jorgen, and I'll bet he doesn't open his mouth except to give you an order or chew you out, right? And Spin is obviously quiet, so your flats must be silent. Our line is always filled with chatter, even with only four of us. Her flightmates defended themselves in a good-natured way, but I found myself stuck on that line about me. Quiet? They thought I was quiet? I suppose I had been pretty reserved lately. But quiet? I honestly didn't think I'd ever been described that way in my entire life. Huh. Dinner broke up, and after we cleared our table, FM nodded toward our bunk. Heading back to rest, or doing some PT? Neither, I said. I think I need a walk tonight. Actually, I needed to check on Mbot and Doomslug. It had been a few days. Suit yourself, she hesitated. Hey, you still worried about Arturo? He'll get to fly, just not on missions. Sure, I said. I know. Stars. Days later, and she thought I still needed consoling. I left the base. I really should have gone and done some PT, but I felt guilty for leaving Mbot alone for so long. I dropped in a few times to help rig with the booster, but now that I lived on base, it was tough to find the time. I wanted to savor the privileges I'd been denied so long. The skylights had dimmed to indicate night, and the air was cool as I made the familiar trek over the dusty ground. It was refreshing to get away from the sights and smells of Alta, to simply be out under the sky again. I reached the cavern and let myself down with my light line, bracing for the inevitable string of complaints. Mbot was not fond of my new sleeping arrangements. He was convinced he was going to rot away, his personality subroutines degrading from lack of use. I reached the ground. Hey, I said, my voice echoing. Hey! Doomslug was on a rock nearby. I shined my light on her, then walked over and scratched her head. Massacrebot? I said into the darkness.
We still have to discuss that nickname, his voice said. I never agreed to it.
If you don't pick a good call sign, someone else will pick one for you. It's how these things go. I smiled, walking up to the ship, expecting him to go off on some tangent. But he was silent as I approached. Was something wrong?
Well, he said. Well?
What did I do this time?
Are you excited? He asked. Are you just about ready to burst? Isn't it great?
Great. The booster, I realized with a start. Rig had finished installing it. I'd done a terrible job of tracking his progress. I'd been so busy these few weeks. But his tools were gone, the area cleaned up, and a note was taped to the back of Mbot's fuselage. Doomslug was sitting on the wing near the note.
Stupid, junky piece of worthless imitation life, she said in a fluting imitation of Rig's voice. Scud, 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 scudding scud and stupid scud.
Careful, girl, I said. You'll get recruited for the ground crews with a mouth like that. She produced a sequence of bangs, mimicking the sound of a hammer on metal, something she'd probably heard a lot of the last few weeks. I picked up the note. Done, the note read. I was going to take it up and test it, but I felt you should get the first shot. Besides, I wouldn't put it past the AI to crash me on purpose. Working on this ship has been the most wonderful experience of my life. Don't tell Mbot that. The designs I've drawn, the things I've learned. I'm going to change the DDF spin. I'm going to transform the entire way we fly and fight. I've not only been approved for the engineering corps, I've been offered a position directly in design. I start tomorrow. Thank you for giving me the chance to find, in this work, my own dreams. Enjoy your ship. I hope that it is, in turn, what you have always dreamed it would be. I lowered the note, looking up along M'Bot's dangerous, razor-like wings. The ship's landing lights flashed on, setting a glow along his length. My ship. My ship.
Well, M'Bot said, are we going to go flying?
Scud, yes. Chapter 43.
Acclivity ring, online,
M'Bot said as we slowly rose into the air.
Booster and maneuvering, online. Life support, online. Communications and stealth features, online. Light lance and IMP anti-shield blast, online.
Not bad, Rig, I said.
Destructors are still offline, M'Bot said, as are self-repair features and cytonic hyperdrive.
Well, since I still don't know what that last one is, we'll take it as a net win. Are your stealth features engaged?
Of course. You promise we aren't going into combat today, right?
No combat, I promised. Just a quick flight to test that booster. We rose through the fake ceiling of the cavern, and I felt myself growing tense, excited. I'd been flying every day, but this was different. M'Bot's control panels somehow made the most complex of the DDF ships seem simple. So I stuck to the buttons I understood. The open sky called. I tried to relax, settling back into my seat. The control sphere, throttle, and altitude lever were exactly like the ones I knew. I could do this.
Are you ready?
M'Bot asked. In response, I slammed on the overburn. We blasted forward, and his advanced G-force management immediately kicked in. I expected to get pressed back in my seat, but I barely felt it, even on full overburn. Scud, I said softly.
Nice, isn't it? M'Bot said. I'm far better than those other ships you waste your time with.
Can we accelerate even faster than this?
Not on one booster, but I'm outfitted with two slots for smaller boosters under the wings, so it's possible.
We accelerated a little slower than a Poco, which made sense, considering we were heavier than one but using the same booster. I noticed a real difference, however, as we got to speed. We blazed past Mag 6, Mag 7, Mag 8. Scud. In a Poco, the ship would be shaking itself almost to pieces right now. But M'Bot hit Mag 10 and I couldn't even tell. It was as smooth a ride as if I were at Mag 1. I tried some maneuvers at speed, and the controls were incredibly responsive. It had been a while since I'd overcompensated for turns by accident, but I got the hang of it quickly. I slowed to normal dogfighting speeds and practiced some banks and then some starship turns. It all went so well that I accelerated to Mag 3 again, then performed some complex dodging moves, swerves, spins, and a sharp loop at the end with an overburn on the descent. It was perfect. This was perfect. I really needed to get Rig up in this thing. Or perhaps Jorgen. I owed him one for helping me get the booster. He'd be grouchy about being forced to come out all the way to my hole, since Jorgen was grouchy about basically everything. But surely he'd enjoy the flying, soaring, free from constraints and expectations, and why was I following this line of thought again? I shook my head, throwing myself back into the flying. Think about how great you'd be in battle, I said to M'Bot.
You promised.
I promised not to take you into combat tonight, I said. But I never promised I wouldn't try to change your mind. Why are you scared?
I'm not scared. I'm following orders. Besides, what good would I be in combat? I don't have destructors.
You don't need those. Your IMP is working, and so is your light lance. With your maneuverability and those tools, we could devastate the Krell. They'll be left chasing our shadow. Then our shadow will consume theirs. This is going to be incredible.
Spin, he said. My orders are to stay out of combat.
We can find a way to change those. Don't worry. He sounded unconvinced,
Maybe we can do something to satisfy your strange human desires without going into an actual fight. You wish for a thrill? What if I projected a battle for you?
You mean like a simulator?
Kind of. I can project an augmented reality hologram right onto your canopy, which will make you think we're in a combat situation. That way, you can pretend to try to get yourself killed, while I don't have to disobey my orders.
Huh, I said, curious. Well, at the very least, it would let me test his responsiveness in a simulation. Let's do it.
Go to 11,000 feet, and I'll drop you into the Battle of Alta.
But I gave that data case back to Cobb.
I made a copy.
He hesitated for a moment.
Was that bad? I thought maybe you'd want to.
No, it's fine. It's the only battle you can simulate for me, though?
It's the only one where I have proper 3D renderings. Is this a problem? Oh, your father. This is the battle where your father became a traitor, something to which you are emotionally vulnerable because of your feelings of betrayal and inadequacy. Whoops.
It's fine.
I could instead try to-
It's fine, I said, putting the ship at the altitude he'd stated, using maneuvering thrusters to settle us. Start the simulation.
All right. No need to get grouchy just because I insulted you.
In a flash, I appeared inside a battle. It was like the simulations, except I was in a real ship. Everything holographic glowed and was slightly transparent, like I was surrounded by ghosts. Which had to be so that I could distinguish reality and avoid accidentally flying us into a cliff face or something. Embot said he was merely projecting all this on my canopy, but it looked three-dimensional to me, and the fighting was amazingly realistic, particularly when I hit my booster and launched into it. Embot even did his best to generate sounds in the cockpit as ships buzzed past us.
I can simulate destructors, Embot said, though you don't have any installed.
I grinned, then fell into position with a pair of DDF fighters. When I dove, targeting a Krell ship that someone else IMP'd, Embot was able to edit the simulation, so my target exploded in a satisfying flash of light. All right, I said. How do I activate proximity sensors?
I can activate them. Done.
Convenient. What else can you do by verbal command?
I have access to communications and stealth features, and I can reignite the shield for you. By galactic law, however, I am forbidden control of boosters and weapons systems, including the IMP. I have no physical connection to these systems, except for diagnostic purposes.
All right, then, I said. Turn on flight leader chatter. Let me hear the recordings as if they were happening in real time.
Done, he said, as the radio came on. Be aware that the audio might not sync with visuals as you interfere with the progress of the battle.
I nodded, then threw myself into the fight. And it was magnificent. I banked and shot, IMP'd and boosted. I spun through a virtual battlefield full of flashing lights, exploding ships, and desperate fighters. I flew a ship with unparalleled maneuverability and felt myself adapting to it, taking increasing advantage. I downed 4 Krell in a half hour, a personal record, without taking anything but a few glancing blows to my shield. Best of all, it was safe. None of my friends were in danger. It was a completely new level of simulation, but still without the threat to anyone's life. Afraid, a piece of me whispered. Afraid of battle. Afraid of loss. That was a near constant voice now. I worked up a sweat, my heart thumping. I focused on a Krell that had been sprayed with destructors by another ship. That shield might be close to being down. I took aim and... A ship darted past me, firing destructors, beating me to the attack and blasting the ship into oblivion. I knew him instantly. My father. Another ship took wingmate position behind my father. Embot, I said, feeling a tremor inside me. Give me audio on those two. The channel crackled, flight leader chatter vanishing. Instead, I got on the direct line between my father and Mongrel.
Nice shot, Chaser, Cobb's voice said.
It sounded exactly like him, only without all the cynicism,
Hot rocks, you're on a roll today.
My father looped back around. I found myself falling in beside him, opposite Cobb, flying wingmate to my father, the greatest man I had ever known. The traitor. I hate you, I thought. How could you do what you did? Didn't you stop to think what it would do to your family? He banked and I followed, sticking to his glowing, transparent form as he chased a pair of Krell ships.
I'll go for the IMP. You see if you can pick them off.
I forced down the sudden burst of emotions at hearing my father's voice again. How could I both hate and love this man at once? How could I reconcile the image of him, standing tall on that day when we'd gone to the surface, with the terrible things I'd learned he'd done? I gritted my teeth and tried to focus only on the fight. The Krell ships dodged into a larger melee of ships, almost colliding with some DDF fighters. My father followed them right in, spinning in a loop. Cobb lagged behind. I stuck on my father, holding tight to his wing. In that moment, the chase became everything, and the world around me faded. Just me, my father's ghost, and the enemy ship. Bank right. Quick cut up. Turn and twist around. Right again. Around that explosion. I put everything I had into the chase. And still, I slowly fell behind. My father's turns were too sharp, his movements too precise. Even though I had M-Bot's superior maneuverability, my father was better than I was. He had years of experience and knew just when to boost, just when to turn. And there was something more. I focused on the Krell ship. It banked right, so did my father. It turned upward, so did my father. It turned left, my father turned left. And I could swear he did it a fraction of a second before the Krell did. M-Bot, I said, time my father's turns in relation to the Krell ship's turns. Is he somehow reacting before they do?
That would be impossible.
Huh.
What? I asked.
I believe the correct term is scud. Spensa, your father is moving before the Krell do. It's only a fraction of a second different, but it is happening. My recording must be desynced somehow. I find it highly implausible that a human would be able to guess these movements so accurately.
I narrowed my eyes, then hit overburn and threw myself back into the chase. I moved until I was inside the outline of my father's ship, the glow of the hologram surrounding me. I focused not on him, but only on the Krell ship, trying to stay with it as it went into another sequence of dodges. Left, right, spin, altitude. I couldn't do it. My father cut and turned at precisely the right time, then IMP'd the enemy ship. They spun around each other in a twisting, intertwined loop, like two braiding ropes. I lost pace completely, falling out of the complex maneuver as my father, somehow, cut his booster at just the right moment to drop behind the enemy. The Krell died in a flash of light. My father pulled out of his dive as Cobb whooped over the line. Young Cobb was certainly enthusiastic.
Chaser, he said. They're pulling back. Have we won?
No,
my father said.
They're just regrouping. Let's return to the others.
I hovered my ship, watching Cobb and my father join the lineup.
That was some mighty fine flying, Ironside said over the channel.
But Chaser, watch yourself. You keep losing your wingmate.
Blah, 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 blah,
Cobb said.
Chaser, stop blowing everything up. You make me look bad. Sincerely, Ironsides.
We are fighting for the survival of all humankind, Mongrel, Ironside said. I would hope to hear some maturity out of you for once.
I smiled. She sounds like Jorgen talking to us. Then I turned, looking toward the Krell regrouping in the distance. Nearby, the DDF fighters formed into flights again. I knew what was coming next.
Would you look at that hole in the debris up there?
Cobb said.
You don't often see such a great alignment of the... Chaser?
I looked upward, but the simulation didn't extend so far as to show me the hole in the debris they were talking about.
Chaser, what's wrong?
Cobb asked.
Is it the defect?
Ironsides asked.
I can control the defect, my father said. But what was that? I hadn't heard that part before.
He was silent for a moment.
I can hear the stars. I can see them too, Cobb, my father said. Like I saw them earlier today. A hole in the debris field. I can get through.
Chaser, Ironside said, stay in ranks. This part I had heard last time. I dreaded hearing it again, but I couldn't force myself to make M'Bot turn it off.
I can get through, Judy. I've got to try. I've got to see. I can hear the stars.
Go, I whispered along with Ironside's. I trust you. She'd trusted him. He hadn't disobeyed orders. He'd gone with her permission. That seemed a tiny distinction to me, considering what would happen next. My father's ship rotated, acclivity ring hinging to point downward. His nose toward the sky, he engaged his booster. I watched him go, tears forming in the corners of my eyes. I couldn't watch this. Not again. Please. Father. I reached toward him. With my hand, foolish though the gesture was, and with something else. I heard something then, up above. A sound like a thousand musical notes intertwining. I imagined myself, as Gran-Gran had always taught, soaring upward, reaching for the stars. My cockpit went black, plunging me into complete darkness. And then, around me, a million pinpricks of light appeared. Then those pinpricks opened. A million white eyes, like stars, all turning directly on me, focusing on me, seeing me. Turn it off, I screamed. The darkness vanished. The eyes disappeared. I was back in the cockpit. I gasped for breath, in and out, hyperventilating. What was that? I demanded, frantic. What did you show me? What were those eyes?
I'm confused, M'Bot said. I didn't do anything. I don't know what you're talking about.
Why didn't you play that earlier part of the conversation last time? Why were you hiding it from me?
I didn't know where to start, M'Bot said. I thought the part about the stars was what you wanted.
And that talk of a defect? Did you know about this?
Humans have lots of defects, he said, his voice whimpering. I don't understand. I can process at 1,000 times the speed of your brain, but I still can't follow you. I'm sorry, I don't know.
I put my hands to my head, my hair damp with sweat. I squeezed my eyes shut, breathing in and out.
I'm sorry, M'Bot said again, his voice softer. This was supposed to have excited you, but I have failed. I should have anticipated that your frail human psyche would be impacted by the—
Shut up! The ship went silent. I huddled in the cockpit, trying to claw at my own sanity. What had happened to my confidence? Where was that child who'd been so sure she could take on the entire Krell fleet by herself? Left behind. Like all childhoods. I couldn't say how long I sat there, hands running through my sweaty hair, rocking back and forth. A severe headache struck me, a piercing pain behind my eyes, like someone had begun screwing my eyeballs to my skull. The pain gave me a focus. It helped me pull back, until finally I became aware of the fact that I was still hovering there, alone above an empty field in the blackness of night. Just get back, I told myself. Just get some sleep. That suddenly seemed like the only thing I wanted in the entire world. Slowly, at first, I settled into the controls and turned us toward the coordinates of our hole.
I'm afraid of death now,
M'Bot said softly as we flew. What? I asked, my voice hoarse.
I wrote a subroutine, he said, to simulate the feeling of fearing death. I wanted to know.
That was stupid.
I know. But I can't turn it off, because I'm more afraid of that. If I don't fear death, isn't that worse?
I steered us to our hole, then positioned us above it.
I'm glad I was able to fly with you, M'Bot said. One last time.
That feels final,
I said, something inside me quivering with trepidation.
I have something I need to tell you, he said, but I'm worried about causing you further emotional distress.
Spit it out.
But just talk. I have to shut down,
Embot said.
It is clear to me now that if I let you keep taking me into the sky, you will not be able to avoid battle. It is your nature. If this continues, I will inevitably be forced to break my orders.
I took it like a physical blow, shrinking back. Surely he wasn't saying what I thought he was saying.
Lie low, he said as we descended into the cavern. Take stock. Don't get into any fights. Those are my orders, and I must obey my pilot. And so, this will be our last time flying together.
I repaired you. You're mine. We settled down.
I am now going to deactivate, he said, until my pilot wakes me. I'm sorry.
Your pilot is dead and has been for centuries. You said that yourself.
I'm a machine, Spencer, he said. I can simulate emotions, but I do not have them. I have to follow my programming.
No, you don't. None of us do.
I thank you for repairing me. I'm certain that my pilot would be grateful.
You'll be turning off, I said, forever. You'll be dying, Embot. Silence. The lights on the console started to go out, one at a time.
I know,
he said softly. I hit the cockpit release, then undid my straps and heaved myself out. Fine, I said. Fine. Die like the others. I scrambled down, then backed away as his landing lights dimmed, until only a few red lights in the cockpit were on. Don't do this, I said, suddenly feeling very alone. Fly with me. Please. The last lights went out, leaving me in darkness. Chapter 44. The next few days, I trained on ships that felt sluggish, commonplace, distinctly inferior beside that transcendent time in Embot's cockpit. It didn't help that we were using heavy fighters, Largo class, which were armed to the teeth with destructors and even some IMP missiles. After that, we moved on to Slotra class fighters, which were more like glorified shuttles or cargo ships than true starfighters. They carried multiple shield igniters that worked in concert to constantly keep a barrier going to protect particularly important cargo or individuals. While they had their place, both these models were too bulky to outrun or outmaneuver Krell. That was why most pilots flew Poco class or Fresa class. Fast ships capable of going toe-to-toe with the speedy Krell interceptors. Even when practicing on a relatively fast Fresa, every turn, every boost, made me think of how responsive Embot had been. It left me wondering, was it finally time to tell the DDF about him? He'd abandoned me. His programming was obviously broken, so I'd be perfectly justified in sending a fleet of engineers to the cave to disassemble him. It was only a machine. So why couldn't I do it? You have free will, I had told him. You can choose for yourself. Watch it spin, FM said, pulling me back with a jolt. I banked too close to her. Scud. I needed to keep my attention on my flying. Sorry, I said. It occurred to me that there were drawbacks to having trained on simulations, where we could blow up and simply be reinserted into the battle. I might have developed some bad habits that could bite me now that we were flying real ships, with real consequences. We ran through a few complex exercises in a three-ship formation, taking turns on point. Finally, Cobb called us back to base.
Spin and FM, he said. You're both better on smaller ships. Aren't we all going to be better on them? Jorgen asked. We've been training on Pocos for months. No, Cobb said. You look like you might take to a Largo.
He's saying you're slow, Jorgen, FM noted. Right, Spin? I grunted my reply, distracted by thoughts of Embot, and my father, and Hurl, and memories of those eyes surrounding me, like Cobb had warned. And Scud. It was a lot to try to carry all at once.
She likes it when I fly slowly, Jorgen said with a forced chuckle. Makes it easier for her to crash into me, if she wants to.
Even after all these months, he still brought up that time I'd won by crashing into him. I cut the line, feeling ashamed, frustrated. We started our flight back for the day, and annoyingly, the direct line from Jorgen turned on. As flight leader, he could override me turning him off.
Spin, he said. What's wrong?
Nothing.
I don't believe that, he said. You passed up a perfectly good opportunity to make fun of me.
I wanted to talk to him. I nearly did, but something held me back. My own fears, perhaps. They'd prevented me from talking to Rig when I'd found out about my father, and had prevented me from telling Cobb, even still, about what I'd seen. My entire world was crumbling around me, and I struggled to hold on to it, clinging to something I'd once been able to rely upon, my confidence. I wanted so badly to be who I had been, the girl who could at least pretend to take it all in stride. Jorgen cut the line, and we flew to Alta in silence. Once there, we went through proper sound-offs and landed.
Nice work today, Cobb said. I've got permission to give you an extra half-day leave, to prep for the graduation in 2 weeks.
I pulled off my helmet and handed it to my ground crew member, then lethargically followed her down the ladder. I changed out of my flight suit by rote, barely talking to FM, then shoved my hands in my jumpsuit pocket and started wandering the DDF grounds. Half a day off. What did I do with it? Once I'd have gone back to work on MBOT, but not now. That was done. And while I'd written to Rig to let him know, covertly, that the initial flight had worked, I hadn't told him that the ship had shut down. I was worried he'd insist on turning MBOT over to the DDF. I eventually found myself out in the orchards, right outside the base wall. But the serene trees didn't offer me solace as they once had. I didn't know what I wanted anymore, but it certainly wasn't some trees. I did notice, however, the line of little hangars near the orchard. One was open, revealing a blue car inside, and a shadow moving about it as Jorgen fetched something from the trunk. Go, a piece of me insisted. Go talk to him, to someone. Stop being afraid. I stepped up to the front of the garage. Jorgen closed the trunk of the car, then started, surprised to see me there.
Spin? He asked. Don't tell me you need another power matrix.
I took a deep breath. You said once that if we needed to talk to someone, we should come to you. You said it was your job as flight leader to talk to us. Did you mean it? He looked down.
Spin, I copied that line out of my handbook.
I know. But did you mean it?
Yes. Please, what's wrong? Is it Arturo leaving?
Not really, I said, though that's part of it. I folded my arms around myself, as if trying to pull myself tight. Could I really say this? Could I voice it? Jorgen walked around the car, then sat down on the front bumper.
Whatever it is, I can help. I can fix it.
Don't fix, I said. Just listen.
Okay.
I walked into the garage and perched on the bumper beside him, looking out the gaping front hangar door, up toward the sky and the distant patterns of the debris field. My father, I said, was a traitor. I took a deep breath. Why was it so hard to say? I always fought against the idea, I continued. I had convinced myself that it couldn't be true. But Cobb let me watch a recording of the Battle of Alta. My father didn't run, like everyone says he did. He did something worse. He switched sides and shot down our own ships.
I know,
Jorgen said softly. Of course he knew. Had everyone known but me? Do you know about something called the defect? I asked.
I've heard the term, Spin, but my parents won't explain it to me. They call it foolishness, whatever it is.
I think it's something inside a person that makes them serve the Krell. Is that insane? My father suddenly joined them and shot down his own flightmates. Something must have happened. Something strange, that's obvious. Learning I was wrong about him has shaken everything I know. Ironsides hates me because she trusted my father and he betrayed her. She's certain I have the same flaw inside me that he had, and has been using sensors in my helmet to test it somehow.
That's stupid, he said. Look, my parents have a lot of merits. We can go to them and...
He took a deep breath and must have noticed the expression on my face.
Right, he said. Don't fix, just listen.
Just listen. He nodded. I wrapped my arms around myself again. I don't know that I can trust my own senses, Jorgen. There are signs my father exhibited before he switched sides. Signs I see in myself.
Like what?
Hearing sounds from the stars, I whispered. Seeing thousands of spots of light that I could swear are eyes watching me. I seem to be losing control of everything in my life. Or maybe I've never had any control in the first place. And, Jorgen, that's terrifying. He leaned forward, clasping his hands.
Do you know about the mutiny aboard the Defiant? He asked. There was a mutiny?
He nodded.
I'm not supposed to know about it, but you hear things when you have the parents I do. During the final days, there was a disagreement about what the fleet should do, and half of the ship rebelled against the command staff. The rebels included the engineering crew.
My ancestors, I whispered.
They're the ones who flew us to Detritus, Jorgen said. Caused us to crash here, for our own good.
But
there is talk, whispers, that the engineering staff was in collusion with the Krell. That our enemy wanted us pinned down, trapped here. My ancestors were from the Defiant science staff, and we also sided with the mutineers. My parents don't want people knowing about the mutiny. They think it will only cause divisions to talk about it. But maybe that's where this silly talk of a defect and mind control by the Krell started.
I don't think it's silly, Jorgen, I said. I think it must be true. I think that if I go into the sky with the rest of you, I could turn against you at any moment. He looked at me and reached out and rested his hand on my shoulder.
You,
he said softly,
are amazing.
I cocked my head. What?
You, he said, are amazing. Everything about my life has been planned out. Careful. It makes sense. I understand it. Then there's you. You ignore my authority. You follow your feelings. You talk like some Valkyrie from a scudding ballad. I should hate you, and yet...
He squeezed my shoulder.
And yet, when you fly, you are amazing. You're so determined, so skillful, so passionate. You're a fire, Spin. When everyone else is calm, you're a burning bonfire. Beautiful. Like a newly forged blade.
I felt a deep warmth rising inside me, a heat that I wasn't prepared to feel.
I don't care about the past,
Jorgen said, meeting my eyes.
I don't care if there's a risk. I want you to fly with us, because I'm damn sure that we're safer with you at our side than not. Mythical, defect or not. I'll take the chance.
Ironsides thought something similar about my father.
Spin. You can't base decisions about your future on something we don't understand.
I looked back at him, meeting his eyes, which were the deepest brown, but with hints of light gray at the very centers, right around the pupils. I'd never noticed that before. He let go of my shoulder suddenly, leaning back.
Sorry, he said. I went straight into fix mode instead of listen mode, didn't I?
No, that was fine. Even helpful. He stood up.
So, you'll keep flying?
For now, I said. I'll try not to crash into you, except when strictly necessary. He smiled a distinctly un-jerk-facey smile.
I should get going. I have to go get fitted for my graduation uniform.
I stood up and we looked at each other awkwardly for a second. Last time we'd had something nearing a heart-to-heart, back on the launch pad, he'd hugged me, which still felt weird. Instead, I offered a hand, which he took. But then he leaned in close to me.
"You aren't your father, Spin," he said. "Remember that."
Then he squeezed my shoulder again before climbing into his car. I stepped back and let him drive off, but then found I didn't know what to do next. Return to base for some PT? Hike to Embot's cave, where he sat lifeless? What was I going to do with leave? The answer seemed obvious. It was past time for me to visit my family. Chapter 45. By now, I was used to the way people treated me up in Alta. They made space for a pilot, even a cadet. On the long street outside the base, the farmers and workers would give me friendly smiles or a raised fist of approval. Still, I was shocked by the treatment I received in Igneous. When the elevator opened, people waiting outside immediately parted, letting me pass through. Whispers followed me, but instead of the harsh notes of condemnation I normally heard, these were awed, excited. It was a pilot. Growing up, I'd practiced staring back when people looked at me. When I did that now, people blushed and averted their gazes, as if they'd been caught sneaking extra rations. What a strange collision between my old life and my new one. I strolled along the walkway and looked up at the roof of the cavern, so far above. That stone didn't belong there, trapping me inside. I missed the sky already, and it was so hot and stuffy down here. I passed the smelting factories, where the ancient apparatus belched heat and light, turning rock into steel. I passed an energy plant that somehow converted the molten heat of the deep core into electricity. I wandered beneath the calm, defiant stone hand of Harald Oceanborn. The statue held up an old Viking sword and had an enormous steel rectangle carved with sharp lines and a sun rising behind him. It was the end of middle shift, so I figured I'd find Mother at the cart selling. Eventually, I rounded a corner and saw her ahead, a lean, proud woman in an old jumpsuit, worn but laundered. Shoulder-length hair, with an air of fatigue about her as she served a wrap to a worker. I froze on the walkway, uncertain how to approach. I realized right then that I hadn't visited enough. I missed my mother. Though I'd never really been homesick, my scavenging trips as a kid had prepared me for long times away, I still longed to hear her comforting, if stern, voice. As I hesitated, Mother turned and saw me, and she immediately dashed over. She seized me in a powerful embrace before I could say anything. I'd watched other kids grow taller than their parents, but I was much shorter than her, and when enfolded in her arms, for a moment I felt like a child again, safe, snug. It was easy to plan future conquests when you could retreat to those arms. I let myself be that girl again, let myself pretend that no danger could reach me. Mother finally pulled back and looked me over. She took a lock of my hair between her fingers and raised an eyebrow. It had gotten long and now tumbled past my shoulders. The DDF haircutters had been forbidden me for the first part of my stay, and after that I'd just gotten used to it long. I shrugged. "Come," Mother said. "That cart won't sell itself." It was an invitation to a simpler time, and at that moment it was what I needed. I helped my ever-practical mother work her way through her line of customers, men and women who looked baffled to be served by a pilot cadet. Odd how my mother didn't call out like other street vendors would. Yet there was almost always someone at the cart buying a wrap. During a lull, she mixed some more mustard, then glanced at me. "Will you go back to getting us rats?" Go back? I hesitated, only now realizing that she didn't know I was on leave. She thought I'd been kicked out. "I still have the jumpsuit," I said, gesturing. But her blank stare confirmed she didn't know what that meant. "Mom, I'm still in the DDF. I was given leave today." Her lips immediately turned down. "I'm doing well,"
I snapped. I'm one of only 3 pilots left in my flight. I'm going to graduate in 2 weeks. I knew she didn't like the DDF, but couldn't she just be proud of me? My mother continued mixing the mustard. I sat down on the low wall running along the walkway. When I'm a full pilot, you'll be taken care of. You won't have to sit up late at night rewrapping food and then spend long hours pushing a cart. You'll have a big apartment. You'll be rich.
You think I want any of that? Mother said.
I chose this life, Spencer. They offered me a big apartment, a cushy job. All I had to do was go along with their narrative. Say I knew he was a coward the whole time. I refused.
I perked up. I'd never heard that before.
As long as I'm here, Mother said, selling on this corner, they can't ignore us. They can't pretend their cover-up worked. They have a living reminder that they lied.
It was one of the most truly defiant things I'd ever heard. But it was also so terribly wrong. Because while my father hadn't been a coward, he had been a traitor. Which was worse, though?
Right then, I realized that my problems went deeper than Jorgen's pep talk could fix. Deeper than my worry about the things I'd seen, or my father's treason. I'd built my identity around not being a coward. It was a reaction to what everyone said about my father, but it was still part of me, the deepest, most important part. My confidence in that was crumbling. My pain at losing my friends was part of it. But this fear that there might be something terrible inside me, that was worse. The fear was destroying me. Because I didn't know if I could resist it. Because I didn't know, deep down, if I was a coward or not. I wasn't even sure what being a coward meant anymore. My mother settled down next to me. Always so quiet, so unassuming.
I know that you wish I could celebrate what you've done. And I'm proud. I really am. I know that flying has always been your dream. It's just that if they were so callous with my husband's legacy, I cannot expect them to be careful with my daughter's life.
How did I explain? Did I tell her what I knew? Could I explain my fears? How do you do it? I finally asked her. How do you put up with the things they say about him? How do you live with being called a coward's wife?
It has always seemed to me, she said, that a coward is a person who cares more about what people say than about what is right. Bravery isn't about what people call you, Spencer. It's about who you know yourself to be.
I shook my head. That was the problem. I didn't know.
4 short months ago, I'd thought I could fight anything and had every answer. Who would have thought that becoming a pilot would end with me losing that grit?
My mother inspected me. Finally, she kissed me on the forehead and squeezed my hand.
I don't mind that you fly, Spencer. I simply don't like leaving you to listen to their lies all day. I want you to know him, not what they say about him.
The more I fly, I said, I think the more I'll know him. My mother cocked her head, as if she hadn't considered that. Mom, I said, did Father ever mention seeing strange things? Like a field of eyes in darkness, watching him. She drew her lips to a line.
They told you about that, did they?
I nodded.
He dreamed of stars, Spencer, my mother said. Of seeing them, unobstructed. Of flying among them as our ancestors did. That's it. Nothing more.
Okay, I said.
You don't believe me.
She sighed, then stood up.
Your grandmother has a different opinion from mine. Perhaps you should speak with her. But remember, Spencer, you get to choose who you are. Legacy, memories of the past can serve us well, but we cannot let them define us. When heritage becomes a box instead of an inspiration, it has gone too far.
I frowned, confused by that.
Grand-grand had a different opinion? On what?
Still, I hugged my mother again and whispered my thanks to her. She shoved me off toward our apartment, and it was with a strange mix of emotions that I left. My mother was a warrior in her own way, standing on that corner,
proclaiming my father's innocence with every quiet sail of an algae wrap. That was inspirational, illuminating. I got her in a way I never had before. And yet, she was wrong about father. She understood so much, yet was wrong about something fundamental. Like I had been. Up until that moment, I watched him turn traitor during the Battle of Alta. I walked for a short time, and eventually neared our boxy apartment building. I stepped through the large arched gateway into the apartment grounds. And as I did, a couple of soldiers returning from shift parted for me and saluted. That was Aluko and Jors, I realized after I'd passed. They didn't seem to even recognize me. They hadn't looked at my face. They'd simply seen the flight suit and stepped aside. I waved to old Mrs. Hong, who, instead of scowling at me, bowed her head and ducked into her apartment and closed the door. A quick glance in the window of our one-room apartment revealed that Gran-Gran wasn't inside, but then I heard her humming to herself up on the roof. Still troubled by what Mother had said, I climbed the ladder onto the top of the box. Gran-Gran sat with her head bowed, a small pile of beads spread out before her on a blanket. With her nearly blind eyes closed, she reached out with withered fingers and selected beads by touch, methodically stringing them to make jewelry. She hummed softly, her face resembling the furrows of the crumpled blanket before her. "Ah," she said, as I hesitated on the ladder. "Sit, sit. I did need some help." "It's me, Gran-Gran," I said. "Spensa."
"Of course it is. I felt you coming. Sit and sort these beads for me by color. I can't seem to tell the green ones from the blue ones. They're the same size."
This was my first visit in months, and, like my mother, she immediately put me to work. Well, I had questions for her, but I probably wouldn't be able to ask them until I was doing what she said. "I'll put the blue ones on your right," I said, sitting. "Green to the left."
"Good, good. Who do you want to hear about today, dear? Alexander, who conquered the world? Hervor, she who stole the sword of the dead? Maybe Beowulf, for old time's sake?"
"I actually don't want to hear stories today," I said. "I've been talking to Mother and—"
"Now, now," Gran-Gran said. "No stories. What has happened to you? Surely they haven't ruined you already, up there in flight school."
I sighed, then decided to approach this from a different direction. "Were any of them real, Gran-Gran?" I asked. "The heroes you talk about. Were they actually people? From Earth?"
"Perhaps. Is it important?"
"Of course it is," I said, dropping beads into cups. "If they weren't real, then it's all just lies."
"People need stories, child. They bring us hope, and that hope is real. If that's the case, then what does it matter whether the people in them actually lived?"
"Because sometimes we perpetuate lies," I said. "Like things the DDF says about my father, as opposed to the things we say about him. Two different stories, two different effects. Both wrong." I dropped another bead into its cup. "I'm tired of not knowing what is right. I'm tired of not knowing when to fight, not knowing if I hate him or love him, and... Gran-Gran stopped what she was doing and took my hand in hers, her skin old but soft. She held it and smiled at me, her eyes mostly closed. "Gran-Gran," I said finally, at long last, finding a way to voice it. "I've seen something. It proves to me we've been wrong about my father. He did turn coward. Or worse."
"Ah,"
Gran-Gran said. "Mother doesn't believe it, but I know the truth."
"What have they told you up above in that flight school?"
I swallowed, feeling deeply fragile all of a sudden. "Gran-Gran, they say father had some kind of defect. A flaw deep inside him that made him join with the Krell. Someone told me there was a mutiny on the Defiant, that some of our ancestors might have served the enemy too. So now they say I have it, and
I'm terrified that they might be right.
Hmm, Gran-Gran said, stringing a bead.
Child, let me tell you a story of someone from the past.
It's not the time for stories, Gran-Gran.
This one is about me.
I shut my mouth. About her. She almost never talked about herself. She started talking in her rambling yet engaging way.
My father was a historian on the Defiant. He kept the stories of old Earth, of the times before we traveled into space. Did you know that even then, with computers and libraries and all kinds of reminders, we found it easy to forget where we came from? Maybe because we had machines to do the remembering for us, we felt we could simply leave it to them. Well, that's a different topic. We were nomads among the stars then. 5 ships, the Defiant, and 4 smaller vessels that attached to it to travel long distances. Well, and a complement of starfighters. We were a community made up of communities, traveling the stars together. Part mercenary fleet, part trade fleet. Our own people.
Grandfather was a historian? I said. I thought he was in engineering.
He worked in the engine room, helping my mother,
Gran-Gran said.
But his true duty was the stories. I remember sitting in the engine room, listening to the hum of the machinery as he talked, his voice echoing against the metal. But that's not the story. The story is how we came to Detritus. You see, we didn't start the war, but it found us nonetheless. Our little fleet of 5 ships and 30 fighters had no choice but to fight back. We didn't know what the Krell were, even then. We hadn't been part of the big war, and by that point, communication with the planets and space stations was difficult and dangerous. Now, your great-grandmother, my mother, was ship's engines.
You mean she worked the engines, I said, still sorting beads.
Yes, but in a way, she was the engines. She could make them travel the stars, one of the few who could. Without her, or someone like her, the Defiant would be stuck at slow speed. The distance between stars is vast, Spensa, and only someone with a specific ability could engage the engines. Something born into us, but something most considered to be very, very dangerous.
I breathed out, surprised and awed all at once.
The defect?
Gran-Gran leaned in.
They feared us, Spensa. Though back then, they called it the deviation. We were a breed apart, the engineers. We were the first people into space, the brave explorers. The ordinary people always resented that we controlled the powers that let them travel the stars. But I told you, this story was about me. I remember that day, the day we came to Detritus. I was with my father in the engineering bay. A vast chamber full of pipes and grids that looks bigger in my memory than it probably was. It smelled of grease and of too hot metal. But there was a window in a little alcove which I could look out of and see the stars. That day, they surrounded us. The enemy, the Krell. I was terrified in my little heart, because the ship kept shaking from their fire. We were in chaos. The bridge, I heard from someone shouting, had suffered an explosion. I stood in the alcove, watching the red lances of light, and could hear the stars screaming. A little frightened girl by a bubble of glass. The captain called down. He had a loud, angry voice. I was terrified to hear the pain. The panic, in someone who was normally so stern. I remember still that tone as he screamed at my mother, giving orders. And she disagreed with them.
I sat there, beads forgotten, wrapped, barely breathing. Why, in all the stories Gran-Gran had told me, had she never given me this one before?
Well, I suppose you could call it a mutiny, Gran-Gran continued.